We'll come back to order. We'll proceed to item four, which is the update on the ESSA listening tours and state plan development. Commissioner, if you would like to bring us up to date, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, today's an update on where we're at with the ESSA work. Actually, we have a couple folks in front of us. Mostly Pat Chapman will be delivering this, but I just wanted to introduce and welcome Barbara Hickman to her first time up at the whatever we call that, the desk, the presentation dais, I don't know. Yes, so, and Alyssa Pearson is also here because she's been actively engaged in the ESSA accountability work as well. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Mr. Chapman.
Thank you, Commissioner Anthes. Thanks for the opportunity to come here and provide an update regarding what's happening on the ESSA front. We want to create as many of these opportunities as possible so that you have a good sense of what's happening and have an opportunity to redirect us if we're heading down a path that we shouldn't go down. What has been happening, we're just wrapping up the ESSA listening tour. We hit 14 sites. We had 14 sessions as a part of that tour. We also met with a number of additional constituency groups along the way. It was a lot of work, and thanks to our communication folks and offices around the department, I think it was pretty successful. And one of the reasons it was successful is that a lot of people gave of their time. We had 731 folks. One of the first sessions was right here in Pueblo, and we really did have a broad array of representation. We had lots of teachers, we had board members, a lot of district administrators, BOCES administrators. We had higher ed. We had a number of parents. And so as we mentioned, I believe it was last month, that we had an evening session with the intent of reaching those that weren't able to attend during the day. And that included a lot of teachers and a number of parents and some students. So it was really a joy to be able to talk with folks about federal education and state education policy who don't, you know, talk about those kinds of things every day. So I think we heard a lot of new perspectives and it gave us a good grounding for the state plan development work to follow. The reports, we collected all, pretty much everything everybody said. We've begun to post the reports. Basically, it's raw data, comments that we received from attendees. We're posting that on our website. We're sending that back to the groups that attended each of the sessions, and we're working on compiling a full summary report. Right now, as I said, it's pretty much raw data. We're beginning to try to pull out some themes that we heard along the way. So what did we hear along the way? One of the things that I did want to mention is that when we address the requirements related to standards, we did note that the standards are scheduled for review pursuant to state statute. So there wasn't a lot of discussion about the standards themselves as part of the tour. But we did talk about how best to measure student progress toward meeting the standards. And a lot of what we've heard, what's included in the PowerPoint isn't necessarily intended to be summative or the definitive in any way. It's just comments that we heard along the way. And for the most part, these comments were provided to us in a number of sites and from a number of people. I think there is a general feeling to increase the emphasis on local assessments, performance task portfolios, to think more broadly than relying so heavily on state assessments. There was a lot of discussion about the state assessments themselves, what's the purpose of them, what's the utility of them, the timing, and what's possible with regard to modifying our state assessments so that they're more useful, I guess, from both an accountability standpoint, but useful to provide useful feedback to schools, districts, and teachers. There's a lot of interest in the possibility of using interim assessments and rolling them up to a single end of year result. And then there are some questions about what is the purpose of the state assessments, and if they're primarily for accountability purposes, might we be able to do them another way? With regard to school accountability and improvement, what measures of school quality or student success should be included in the school accountability system? We heard a lot of this was really sort of all over the place. But I think that they really wanted to be able to utilize their local information, their local data, their local context, and as part of the accountability process. So measuring opportunities. What are the opportunities that they provide to students in addition to are the student outcomes? The caution to beware of unintended consequences. As soon as something becomes an accountability indicator, there's a risk that the system will be gamed or will be changed or and as an example, if you use discipline, will districts be reluctant to support discipline issues? There's a strong request to not create a process or a system that's overly burdensome to schools and districts, I think particularly from a rural perspective. And lots of comments regarding how to include measures of climate and culture and health and wellness metrics into our accountability system because they've been missing thus far. One of the questions was, well, what can CDE do to provide support that's helpful to districts, particularly those districts that have schools on improvement? One of the things that we heard was those that have been participating in CDE's turnaround network, that they've really liked that, it's been valuable to them. The professional development that's tied to the network has been hugely helpful. One of the comments is listed here, that the ability to network with other schools and deal with the hard questions and the use of their performance management tool has been helpful to them in their turnaround efforts. A lot of it was regarding what can CDE offer some sort of online menu, a menu of supports. What are the supports that we have? How can we organize them in such a way that schools and districts can request them or that we can be more intentional in our offer of support so that it's clear the supports that we can, that we provide. So things like professional development, curriculum and instruction, UIP development, those kinds of things. But we also heard that one of the things that they appreciate is for us to, when we identify best promising practices, schools or districts that are really seem to be succeeding and connecting those schools and districts with schools and districts that are struggling, and so that they can learn from the high-performing schools and districts and adopt some of their practices that seem to be key to their success. Feedback regarding teacher qualifications and support. ESSA changes the rules, so it does away with highly qualified. One of the questions we were asking is, in addition to holding a license, should teachers be required to demonstrate competency in the subject area in which they teach? And there is a lot of consistency and yes, but the feeling that they're already doing that as part of the educator evaluation and licensure requirements. A lot of discussion about focusing on student outcomes as opposed to inputs and credentials of teachers. And also, while there's a desire for high quality, there's a reality that a lot of districts are struggling with recruitment and retention. There's a teacher shortage, and how do we balance that desire for increasing teacher effectiveness with the reality that there's a teacher shortage? And the caution that we shouldn't really make it more difficult to get a license. What support should CDE provide to help teachers provide effective instruction? Again, it was sort of a menu of options specific to specific learning needs of students, more time and more for and more professional development in support of those diverse learners, increase the emphasis on MTSS, utilize that framework and provide more support for MTSS implementation in the field. Oh, a multi-tiered system of supports. It's like RTI and PBIS. I'm sorry.
You know me.
It's okay. A system of interventions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Different levels of help for students.
I'm anti-acronym.
Sorry about that. And then again, organize a menu of sorts with training available to teachers and a schedule for the training and how teachers can go about accessing that training and the funds that they might be able to utilize in support to access that training.
No.
So, what were the general themes? A lot of it was, there was an appreciation, they like what appears to be the greater state and local flexibility and discretion provided under ESSA when compared to No Child Left Behind. And they appreciate the opportunity to provide input and help develop Colorado's ESSA plan. And while there's relief that AYP and highly qualified and some of the other more burdensome requirements of No Child Left Behind have been eliminated, there's concern that ESSA doesn't turn into another No Child Left Behind with new requirements and new administrative burdens. So really putting us on notice to not develop a plan that creates unnecessary work. Appreciation of the ESSA focus on the whole child, consideration of what it means to be healthy and well-rounded, those things that are tied to academic success, but haven't necessarily received a lot of attention through No Child Left Behind or accountability system. And there was a lot of good conversation around the, again, I think this is what you heard last month, the relationship between state and federal law and policy, specifically with regard to standards, assessments, accountability, teacher qualifications. So what's state and what's federal, and what are our opportunities given both? So there was a lot of good, helpful feedback. It was really good to be able to meet with folks face to face and discuss some of these requirements at length, and not just the requirements, the opportunities. There's a lot of good feeling, and it was a real collaborative effort across CDE. But meanwhile, back in Washington, D.C., while we were talking about this with the field and going out there and really feeling that there was some promise and some opportunity to do things differently, in Washington, they are writing proposed rules regarding accountability, state plans, and data reporting, and they released those rules on May 31st. And what's included here is basically the first sentence of the summary of the proposed rules, with the part of it highlighted in red. And I don't know, I can't think of the name of the movie, but there's the movie Show Me the Money, and Renee Zellweger says, you had me at hello.
Jerry Maguire.
With Jerry Maguire. They lost me with the goal of giving states new flexibility. And that's the first sentence, and it's followed by 192 pages. I meant to delete the reference of the 192 pages, I forgot. But it is 192 pages. And while it's good that a lot of the rules, and I do think they wrote many of the rules from the perspective of students with diverse learning needs and with an intent of protecting the civil rights of students, in many cases, I really believe they got it wrong. So what we're doing is we're really going through the rules and we just received them, I think it was a week ago, Tuesday, and really vetting them to identify areas where rules might be helpful or supportive of parents and children, and they're missing, but also trying to identify the rules that are totally unnecessary and serve only to limit state and local discretion, given especially the promise of increased flexibility. Rules that are in conflict with statute or have no basis in statute seem to appear sort of out of thin air. And hope to have a draft of our comments by late June in the next several weeks, and really going through it rule by rule. There are many cases where they just restate statute and don't add anything to the statute. I think the statute was really pretty prescriptive to begin with, and in many cases, the rules that they've created limit state and local discretion. They create a requirement that doesn't exist in statute, and then as part of our state plan, we either need to meet that requirement or make a case for why what we propose is better. And so it really sort of sets up a process of minimizing flexibility as part of the state plan process or monitoring down the road. And there's a concern that if these rules are in place for 10 years or so, that now's the time to react and express our concern about the proposed rules. We've sent you the invite to comment on the rules and regs. I think that comments from our State Board of Education would carry really a lot of weight, and be happy to help you walk you through the proposed rules in relation to what's in statute, develop your own comments if you so choose. The window for submitting the comments closes on August 1st, so it's a 60-day period. They have to be finalized by the end of the calendar year. The expectation is that they might try to finalize them in October, November. But again, if these rules go through as is, I don't know what would happen under a new administration. Also feeling like this administration's on the way out, and they're writing rules that will be for plans that will be approved by the next administration, and so there's that concern as well.
May I just stop you for a second?
Sure.
If it's so important, I mean, I think it is important that we respond. Is it possible before June is over to have a special